Blog Talk Radio.
And good afternoon. Hi, my name is Ann McNeil. I am the Master Wealth Builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life and business. And we want to welcome you to another episode of Hashtag I Am Revere Beach. Today, my co-host and I, Dan Calloway and Steve White, want to continue to remind you to comment, like, and share this show. But I am thoroughly, continually convinced after reading the book, Acres of Diamonds by Russell Conwell, that we are leaving the diamond mines in our own backyards as we continue to travel around the world looking for larger diamonds, when in fact the diamonds we seek are found within us in our own hometown from whence we have come. Therefore, we are calling this podcast Hashtag I Am Revere Beach, Hashtag Revere Beach Pride. Our vision is to continue to shed a bright light on the wonderful, smart, talented individuals from our great city, Revere Beach, Florida. Today, our very special guest is Edward Walker. Edward Walker played under Dan Calloway in Little League Baseball while he was a kid growing up in Revere Beach. Edward attended elementary school and junior high school in Revere Beach. While at Suncoast High, he then went on to play baseball at Palm Beach Junior College and began playing baseball at LSU after graduating junior college. He returned to Suncoast after college to assist Al Sutton, who was also his high school coach. Mr. Walker joined the Revere Beach Fire Department after coaching and advanced through the ranks to captain. He worked for 23 years before retiring and now enjoys golf and fishing while assisting seniors in his area. So welcome to the show, everybody. And Dan, we will turn this program over to you. Thank you, everybody, for joining.
Thank you
very much, and good afternoon to everybody. Edward, the bio is just beautiful, but I need you to go back and give us a little more about growing up in the area you did with your brothers and your two brothers and your two sisters, five of you. Tell us a little bit more about elementary and middle school. And then, of course, you need to tell us more about Suncoast, because I'm reminded that back in 75, you were the second black to be the athlete of the year. Conrad Jones was the first, and then you were the second. And then the floodgates opened for the next 15 years with all blacks being the athlete of the year after going 30 years with none. So start that over again, elementary, middle school, and high school.
Yes, we moved from West Palm before I started first grade, and I moved to Revere Beach, and we went to Lincoln Elementary Middle School, and my sister and brothers both went there, and my father worked for Rubin Construction, and we had a good family network there. We were solid in that. My daddy told us how important education was. So in elementary school, we started there. And the first thing, one of the things I did after elementary, I had my baseball glove and I met Mr. Dan Calloway. And that was one of the best things that ever happened to him in my life, to meet you and start playing baseball. And I took a liking to it, and I played other sports. But during the elementary years, I played baseball, and that's why I took a liking to it. And that's what I enjoyed doing when I went on to college to play baseball. And then in middle school, we went to Kennedy, and we played middle school baseball over at John F. Kennedy with a lot of guys that went through your league, and we played there. And then on high school baseball, I was the only black on the baseball team until Darryl Smith joined the team. Other guys stopped black in baseball and started playing football and basketball and other sports, and all of them dropped out of playing baseball, which was the first sport that a lot of them started playing in the Riviera Beach through your league. And I enjoyed every minute of it.
Well, one of the things that being you played in junior college, you played in with LSU, Louisiana State University, baseball, and you had a chance to sign a contract, because that was some of the scouts asking me giving a little more about you. But you opt to come into, you had a chance to be actually the recreation director at the time being. It was a transition. I haven't forgotten the person who was there. You turned it down to go to the academy to be a fireman. You didn't want to be in that position. Like Shaq turned it down to Conrad.
Right.
Didn't, but he ended up over there with you. And because of in the fire department, which a lot of you, I remember Mr. Wilson and Mr. McCray.
Yeah.
We all got about 12 of you and were talking to you all why it was so important to go into the fire department, because you had to pass a special test, and you and those guys, West and the rest of them, they had the ability. And it was very fortunate for us that we end up with a black captain, not a captain, but a chief. And we should
right.
never forget that. So you all worked up under Richard Wester. We call him Dry Rock.
That's
main
right.
thing about why did you get into, I know about golf, but why did you get into fishing to be a master fisherman that goes all over? 3 weeks ago, you were in Carolina with our fishing club, and you caught all those striped bass, and you're planning a trip now with five to go down to the Keys and catch us all kind of snappers. The senior citizens that you've been feeding for years, because you've been doing that helping me out, or the youth recreation, to try to give back, is that because you were given so much when you were a kid and your family influenced you to always look out for the least, the lost, and the left out?
And that's exactly right. And a lot of it comes from you, too. When I saw you coming up, you always wanted to help people. And that's one of the reasons I went to the fire department, because I knew it was going to be a job that's going to help the people. And being in Riviera Beach, in a predominantly black community, when we go on calls, the people in the community saw somebody that looked like them, and that was gratifying, and knowing that I could do it and help and give back where I worked, in the town. A lot of people say it's going to be tough because you're going to see death and you're going to see all that. But I said, I can handle that as long as we treat the people right. And one of my things was when I went to the fire department, my crew, I told them this. I said, if you treat the people in this town like that's your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, you'll never have a problem. That was one of my mottos to my guys that worked under me. But that was a real rewarding job for 23 years at that. If I had to do it, I'd do it again.
Beautiful. Now,
you said about the fishing, I think the fishing came from my mother. She used to love to go fishing, when we were kids, and I would love taking her fishing, just like I enjoy taking you now. That's one of the things I give back to take you, Mr. Clark, on that boat. That was a lot of joy to take y'all out after showing me when I was a little boy to show me the routes, to go back and take the people that showed you the way out is very rewarding. And my mother was loved to go fishing, and I remember, I'll never forget this as long as I live, my mother, the neighbor guy had a boat, but my mother would never let me go on the boat with the neighbor man, and I didn't understand that. She said, she told me later in life that I would not be able to live, forgive myself if I let you go on that boat and something happened. She said, that man ain't going to watch you like he watch his kids. But when I would go in the room, I would cry. But I wouldn't talk back. I would tell myself, when I get a man, I'm going to have my own boat. And it came true that I got my own boat, got two boats. That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Well, I ate a meal at your mother and father table. I was one of the people that your father, J.W., he always would come and say, Mr. Calloway, you got to have a meal with my family. And here's a man working hard. And with five or six kids feeding me. Yeah, because he said that was one way to give back for me, looking after John, Joe, and you, and Linda, and Patricia,
that's right.
too. All of you all came right through there. And your sister, now she went down to Palm Beach Junior College on a scholarship to play softball. In the top five best softball players that Palm Beach County have ever put out, Linda Walker was in that five. She was just tremendous. Yeah. Now, did you get the background of going to church and giving back? Was that from your mother or your father? Because both of them was big into that, if I remember.
Yeah, both of them. Both of them. That's the only thing we did, because a lot like our neighbor later right now. And we gave, make sure, because she would bring us clothes from the rich people in Palm Beach, you know, and when we wore that for our school clothes. And I always said, when I get older, I want to give back and be able to do for some other people like people have done for me, you know. And that's important, to give back.
Well, what you see right now is the difference with all the violence and the gangs and different things that are happening, and we're big into, and I talked to you not too long ago, that's why I got to get with the man at the Gulf Coast, because we got to put more emphasis on mental health. And being a person who was reared up in Riviera, in Palm Beach County, and went away, and all the years you watch and you get upset because of black-on-black crime and killing, and people not standing in the gap to take care of the little leaguers or the kids, and then most of all put a lot of emphasis on the senior citizen. Is that because of your family and the area and Federal Garden that you were reared up in and playing all the sports at the Tate Gym, now the Callaway Complex, and especially going to playing football and basketball at Suncoast with Coach Sutton involved, because he's one of the greatest leaders that this area have ever seen. That you, with the combination of your family and the recreation and the school, is that where you got a lot of your knowledge that you want to give back? And not only that, you are doing that at a number one scale?
That's right. It had a lot to do with it. And I think today a lot of kids don't have that. They don't have that mentor to, you know, to look up to and somebody to strive to be better every day. Because a lot of times the kids get out of school, they don't have nowhere to turn. They don't have tutoring, and they need that. And so once the kid don't be able to learn and do the things in school, so he won't go, because he's going to be behind and he won't be able to keep up with the other kids in school, so they'll sway away from the school and go do other things. They'll get with the street people, and then they're going to teach them. If you don't learn that, then the family, they don't have no foundation for the church or nothing for them to lean on. They'll lean on other people in the streets. They'll get led, because some people are leaders and some people are followers, and that's where they become followers, and then you lose the kid to the streets. And that's what we got to get back to give them something to do after school, tutoring, ball, or something they got to do, have something that they can fall in love with. And there's nothing wrong with falling in love with sports or something, teaching, try to get a trade school, trying to go be an electrician, a carpenter, and all that kind of stuff that come into play. Because I look at today in my neighborhood where they're building a lot of houses, there are blacks doing that kind of work, and we did that back in the day, construction with that manual labor. We did. Ain't nothing wrong with that. My dad said, you earn it by the sweat of your brow. And I mean your eyebrow. What are you talking about? You got to let the sweat get down in your eyes like you did when we worked for Bucky McGann and you cutting them condos. That taught us discipline. We always had work in the fish market for you. That taught us that you got to work to earn your keep. That's right.
Well, one thing, that because I'm going to turn it over to Steve, you mentioned about tutoring after school. The far as I'm concerned, the greatest tutor that I've ever met is right on the line here, Steve White. He's over our education program and everything. Steve, get in here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Ed, you know, it's an honor to hear you talk. I know you, but I don't know you, right? Growing up in Riviera Beach. So, you know, so just really hearing you talk a lot more about your story is really very impressive. So there were a couple of things that I want to ask you to address, and you touched on a little bit. One is, you know, the importance of giving back, you know, when, like you said, the things that Mr. Callaway and all of the other elders, including your own parents, gave you, and then you giving that back. And then also talking about, again, a little bit more about the benefit of playing sports, because, you know, too often we have young people who get involved in sports and they all think they're going to the league, you know, they're going to the pros. But there are so many other tangible and intangible things that you get out of playing sports. So could you talk about, you know, what sports did for you as far as helping, you know, build your character and becoming a man, and also, you know, the importance of just giving back?
Oh, yeah, definitely. When you play sports, and some sports, individual sports, some are team sport. Once you get on the team and you learn how to get along, and then you got coaches, you have somebody to listen to and guide you. And a lot of people don't have that these days. And a lot of people, like you say, they'll get on a team and they want to run the team, and you can't run the team if you ain't the coach. So you got to fall in line and toe the line and do as the coach say. And then do your best every time you get on the field. I used to tell when I coached the baseball team, because I tell guys playing for me, I say, you never know who in the stands watching you. So every time you go on the field, give 110%, because it's going to be a man up there with your future in your hand. It's for a scholarship or maybe a pro contract. But all of us, like you say, everybody ain't going to make it to the big show. So you got to do something. Make sure you get that degree and have something to fall back on. So when you get in the world, you got a toehold to do something with your life.
Now, what about the discipline that you learn from sports? Because one of the things, well, we're two things, okay, because, again, I do a lot of mentoring, like Mr. Calloway was saying. I work with a lot of young men. And so I find that a lot of them like discipline. They don't have the discipline. So, you know, the discipline and also just sticking to something. You know, you get involved and you stick with it. You don't give up, you know, if it gets a little challenging or difficult, you know, so talk about how, you know, what sports, how does that help you, or did that help you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Sports help with the discipline, because like you had to be on time. You know, one thing, and Mr. Calloway taught me this when a little boy, he didn't care how good a player you was on the team, the bus would leave you. And you had to be there on time. And for this day on, I'm always on time. And that's discipline. You're being on time. You can't wait on use another man's time for your time. When you say 8 o'clock, you be there at 8 o'clock. And I try to stick to that. And that's one thing, being on time and then going to school, getting your schoolwork, and be obedient. That's another thing. Okay, be obedient and listen to somebody. But that's, if you don't listen to me, you're going to listen to somebody. When you're talking to somebody you're going to listen to, it might not be the person you like, because you'll be down somewhere in a place where they lock you up. Then you're going to listen to those people. But now you're free, and you can take that discipline I'm trying to tell you and work it for your good. And a lot of times, you know, kids won't do that, but we try to teach them that, you know. And I went back in the area and back at home and in schools. I made a commitment to go to all the elementary schools and substitute teach at one point. And I had the little boys trying to be a mentor to them. And I think a lot of them I touch, because a lot of them see me to this day and say, hey, coach, or, Mr. Walker, you know, respect. And that's the key. You got to have respect. To get discipline, you got to have respect for people. And then that discipline will come when you listen to people, good people.
Well, Edward, let me put this in right quick, Steve.
Okay.
Before I turn it back over to you. Edward, in 1969, the kids from Riviera, from Tate Gym, we won the state Little League tournament. You grew up with all those guys. You and Shaq and Leon was really younger than the Moses boys, Ronnie Moses and his brother, the left-hander, and Conrad and what the white kid name of?
Andrew
White.
Andrew White. He was a starting pitcher. And that team was that good. And we played in a lot of state tournaments, but that's the only Little League ever won. And then in 72, Bill Russell, the great basketball player from the Boston Celtics, and the group in Connecticut, Hartford, Connecticut, they invited our teams from Tate, because we were known to play a lot of great sports, and especially basketball. And we went up there, you and Leon and two or three more of the little Obradovich boys was my ball boys. Y'all were a little young because of with the kids like Derek Wiley and Al Sutton Jr. and David Cromartie and of course Conrad Jones. They were on the junior team, and Cecil Ralford was a star along with Randolph Burns on the team. We were gone for 7 days. We chartered a bus. The town raised the money to charter a bus to get us up there, and we stayed in family's home. Now, Malcolm Cunningham was on that team with him too. What did you get out of that as a little boy? You went to two places.
That was,
you went to Connecticut in 72. In 73, you were on the trip on the team when we went to Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Elaborate
that, that
on
was,
that.
That was two trips that you'll never forget as a kid, to go away from home, to be away from home, and go up to somebody else's house and live and have people chaperone you. And you got to have discipline to do that, and you got to be obedient to do that, because you just can't go to out of town like that and run but wild. So that was, for me, that was a good experience to get away from there and to go to Notre Dame to play on their main floor. I tell people about that all the time. We went, I was 14, 15 years old. We went to Notre Dame to play on their main floor. They said, how you get there? I said, Mr. Calloway took us there. And then we went down to Chicago to Wrigley Field. I had never been out of town to a baseball field game like that in the middle of the day. The stadium full of people in Chicago, Wrigley Field. Yeah, and that's, and that was why I never forget those trips. And I tell people about all time, young kids, I try to remind them, let them know my experience so you can experience that, because it's more, Revere Beach is nice, but you got to get out and see the world. It's a world, big world out here, and you can, it's good to go travel and see places and do things and meet other people in other places.
Well, yeah. The reason why I cut in for Steve, now Steve, get back in there, because you see, you just elaborated on by traveling and learning other things around the world. And that's what Steve is trying to do with a lot of kids in
right.
his classroom.
That's right.
Go ahead,
that's
Keith.
Right.
Steve.
Yeah, no, again, it's and that's what I wanted to pick up on is, like you were saying, Ed, that there is a whole world out there. And so getting the young people, because one of the things that I find, and I'm sure all of us have had that same experience, is that with our young people, if they don't know that there is a whole world out there, if they don't know the opportunities and things that people are doing outside of Riviera Beach, then they don't know. You know, if you you can only do what you know. So if you're not exposed
That's true.
To things, you know. So, yeah, when you say that you all went to Chicago and Notre Dame, you know, making those kinds of trips, you know, that exposure just shows you that there's a whole world out there. So, again, I think that coming back to what I was saying earlier about helping young people understand some of the benefits of sports beyond just this idea that you go into the pros, you know, just getting the chance to travel and see the world and knowing that there's other opportunities out there, that's really what we've got to do for our young people, because I know that I work with young people and many of them have not been outside of the state of Florida. Many of them have literally not been outside of Palm Beach County sometimes.
Yeah,
so they just don't have any idea of what's going on.
That's so.
Edward, I sat with you over 6 weeks ago. First of all, you got the team going to go on the boat to go out in the ocean, and you're going to take 3 to 5 kids at a time. Now, we talked about preparation of before we get on the boat, because you can't go out in that ocean and don't have one of those life jackets. And, of course, when you on a boat and everybody's throwing the reel in the water, you got to stay in your lane. Explain why it's so dangerous with the hooks may get in your face or if you don't pay attention. Tell the listening audience about that.
Yeah. That's one of the important things of fishing. It gives you discipline, too, because you're on a boat. You can't just jump and run around and everything. You have to sit in your seat, sit down, and you watch the water, and you watch your pole, and you watch the people on the boat around you. So it would be protection. That's one of the biggest things on a boat is safety is first. Everybody has a life jacket. You got to know where the life jacket is at. And then kids under a certain age, you have to wear the jacket at all times. But one thing is adults, too, we should wear them all the time we get in the water. And so that's a good thing. And then once you teach a child to fish, he can fish for a lifetime because he can catch his fish and he can eat. But see, if you never experience it, and I think it's an opportunity you miss, because it's something you could do. You know, the rest of your life is fish. It's not strenuous. You can go out, and you can make money fishing because you can make it on the boat. You can get on one of them charter boats and make money. So it's a lot of opportunities when you're talking about fishing. You know, and that, like a lot of time what we do. We get the people, we get catch the specks, we clean them and give them to the old ladies and stuff in the neighborhood, you know. And that's a rewarding in itself, that you're giving something to somebody they can eat and they're going to enjoy it. That's right.
Well, you also said that, and I talked to Steve, and then I talked to our great leader, and she said she would love to go Well, we're gonna cook the fish on the land. I mean, at the when we go to Okeechobee, you know, on that over there where they can clean the fish and then cook it while it's out there.
Right.
Well, you said you were gonna put that together, and I talked to my people right here who I have so much respect for because I've known them all their life. For now, and I thought that was just tremendous. Steve said, "No, I want to get on the boat and go fishing too."
I said,
"That's great, Steve. We're going to get you on there." And then Ann said she want to go. And then I said, "Ann, you'll be over there with me when Kenny Morrow, who are we going to take to cook the fish, and maybe Leon." She said, "No, I want to get on the boat and fish too." So are you still going to put that together sometime? We don't have to, you know, we have to worry about the weather. See, more
right, that's
explain
right.
Explain the weather and the moon and all the stuff that you got to know.
You're like in fresh salt water, the tide got to be right, you know, the high tide, low tide. And a lot of times, like we crappie fishing on the lake, you want the new moon when it's dark out at night. We put our lights out, and that's mostly to attract the fish to the boat when you got the light shining in the water. And then, you know, what kind of bait you're going to use. A lot of times you use minnows, and sometimes you can use an artificial jig and get them. So it's a lot to it. It's a technology to it, and you learn by listening to the old guys on the lake. That's why I befriend people, so they learn. It's a learning curve. So when you learn that curve and you get your spots and everything, then you can take people out and enjoy the water. There's nothing like it. Get out there, peace of mind on the water. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Before I turn it over to Ann, because she want to ask some questions, and Steve going to get back in, explain what happened when about 3 weeks ago when you all went to Carolina. In other words, you were gone 2 or 3 days. Give us an update from the captain of the ship.
Yeah, we went out to Carolina because there's one member at the country club, Piper, where I used to work. He loved to fish, and I take him out Okeechobee sometimes. So he reversed the favor and said, "Hey, y'all, in the summer, y'all come to North Carolina, I'll meet y'all, and we'll go fishing." So we did. We got a guy. We went out. And the guy we went out with, he was a good guy. He took us out there the first day. We caught some fish. But the second day, we caught 60 fish in an hour with the guy. His name Chip Hamilton in North Carolina. We were fishing on Lake Hartwell. The water was so clean. My one buddy was saying, "Look how clean this water is. I can't believe it." And the fish just bit for 1 hour. We had 60 fish. We had to go back to the dock because we had our limit. And that's fishing right there, yeah. And fishing and catching at the same time.
But you told me something about certain times of the year, of course. Let's say specks, the blue gills or something.
Right.
Explain that to the public. Because you can't catch certain fish all year round. You can't catch fish down here, the mackerel. Explain that.
Yeah, like now we're going to be coming into the mullet run in October. You call it the mullet run. That's when the saltwater fish really turn on, when the water's starting to cool off a little bit. And then the crappie are coming in November. They'll start biting on the north side of the lake, and they'll move over to the west side in the middle of the winter and start laying their eggs this morning. And in January, February, March, that's the top time for crappie fishing. And then the saltwater, that time of year, the mackerel, the bluefish will make the run chasing the bait down the beach. And you have to keep abreast of all that if you're going to conquer to catch some fish. You can go fishing, but a lot of people ain't going to catch fish. So they ain't looking at the moon, the table, the tide, and all that. So you got to take all that into consideration when you're going fishing.
So you got to be a little smart here. Once again, we're getting back to Steve about brain power. That's why we get fish goes by surround everybody. The last thing I need to say before we get back to Ann and when you were a boy, and I was still running the gym, I took a busload of you all to Belgrade.
That's right.
We had a fishing club with Clark Martin and Ronnie Robinson, and myself had about 4 or 5 of you all. We went over to catch the fish, the specks over in Belgrade. And over in the glades, because of the lake there, they opened those dikes up. And when they opened those dikes up and threw those canals, those fish, you can fish right on the land there.
Yeah,
those things now, Vincent Osborne, you, two of the five, they own their own boats now. Because you all fell in love with fishing way back then. Now, Shaq is a latecomer, but he loves to be out there.
Yeah, he likes underwater, yeah.
And?
Yes, sir.
You ready to ask him something? Because we're going to take you on that boat.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I would just say that Mr. Walker and I had an opportunity just for a few minutes, not long, but just for a few minutes before the program started, talking about the Riviera Beach Fire Department and the fact that now that he's retired, one of the long-time dreams and goals for the fire department naturally was to have a new fire house. So now that the city is building a new fire station, I just would like to get your thoughts and your opinions, Mr. Walker, on this, you know, finally, this new house that the city is planning on building for this fire.
Right. It was way overdue, and I appreciate you going to be doing that for the city because the citizens will get a good benefit out of that, and it's way overdue. The fire stations then need to be repaired, but there's so much cost to repair them. You're building a new one. I think that's a good thing, and all the citizens of Riviera Beach deserve that. And I'm so proud. Like I told you earlier, I said I might have to come back to work with the new fire station because I know they're going to be nice, new sleeping quarters, new cooking quarters. And that's what makes you, that's what makes you when you go to the firehouse. It's just like home. You know, when the guys come into work, they want it just like they're at home because they're going to be there for 24 hours. You ain't going back home when you come. And a lot of the guys couldn't handle that when they were at 24-hour duty, you know. But I came in there and I took the lock into it, and I worked overtime. They said, Eddie, you don't never go. I said, well, I'm going to go home, and I can stay right here just like home. I'm in this city working for my taxpayers, and I can get it just like at home. TV, you can't beat it. But, yeah, I'm glad you're doing that. It's way overdue.
I would like to, though, challenge us, and I know Mr. Calloway, we've had some conversations about, but he just finished talking to you about the conversation he had when you were deciding which career to take and you chose this path. How important do you think it is for our future firemen and firewomen to look like you in the city?
The women? Oh, yeah. We had, when I worked at a fireman, we had one about four or five women on the department then, and I encouraged them. A lot of guys, they're women coming on doing that job. I said, no, these girls can pass these tests. They can do this job. I'm always encouraging to the women. And as a matter of fact, the one girl that's a division chief or something, and she's going to be getting promoted. She called me the other day and was saying that she's going to get promoted to a division chief job, which is good. So, no, I love for the women to get in the young black girls and get in the fire department. It's a good job. But like we said earlier, they've never been exposed to it, and they don't know. So that's why we have to get them in there, let them go around the station and look at it, and they see other girls look like them. They say, I could do this job. That's kind of like what I did. I said, I could do that job. I see the guys sitting out on the fire station at Station 2 on Blue Heron. I was with Mr. Bill Wilkins. We playing. Go and play golf. We coming back. I said, the guys out there, I said, I could do that job right there. And from that point on, I went to conquer that job, to get that job.
Going back. Go ahead, Dan.
No, I was going to comment about in law enforcement, they have police cadets. And in the sheriff's office, I went to Grand Rapids, Michigan to understand about junior deputies. You got the school patrol in the fourth grade. Do the fire department have, like, junior firemen training kids when they're in school, like the Boy Scouts or something, or the Girl Scouts, where they can pick that up early, and they're going to have to go through the academy, just like you do in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Do they have that?
In Boca Raton, they had an academy like that, and I got right now, Chef Anthony Williams, his son, I've been mentoring him. He in the Indian River College. He just graduated high school. Matter of fact, his daddy gave him a dinner. I gave him my captain helmet, the incentive to make him push him a little bit. He going now. But when he was in high school, they had a program on the weekend where he could go out, roll the hoses, and did a little thing like that. And he told his parents he wanted to be a fireman. So, and I was proud of him. And he got in the program. They do have programs they can get in, but they there are certain schools. But I know in Boca they had a big school where kids can start in high school, sign up for the fire academy in high school, and they work you right on through the whole academy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm not talking about going to the academy. I'm talking about getting the kids in elementary school. It's just like the school patrol, the junior deputy program. That's like in the fourth and fifth grade. And it's just like, well, you open the window where kids say, well, I want to be a police officer. I want to be a fireman. Give them an opportunity. I mean, if they don't have it, then we've got to, I got to set it with the city manager in the fire department or something.
Yeah. Right.
Because, that's how you get that exposure or something like that.
Right.
The thing that Riviera always supposed to be first. We don't have to worry about somebody else not doing it. If it need to be done, that's what we need to do. Because 90% of the kids who are going to get it, they're going to be black kids anyhow. And you want to give them an opportunity to have a job. My second oldest nephew, you met Tony. He comes down and play golf with you all.
That's right. Right.
He was the assistant fire chief in New Haven, Connecticut. He's put 30 years in there. Now he lives in Charlotte because he's retired. But part of my family, then I had a lot of relations. My nieces and nephews got in up in New Haven. But my second oldest nephew, he was assistant fire chief in New Haven, Connecticut, and he made a good life.
That's great. That's great.
You know, this story reminds me of the Blue Bloods that come on TV, whatever that program is, with the grandfather, the father, and now all the children, whether they're lawyers or whatever. The whole family, even now the grandchildren are being groomed to go into some form of law enforcement. And I really think that we really want to begin to look at our city and just determine in advance, who do we want to be known as? Who do we want to be known? For example, there is a big move and a big push to be known as the Marine area that educate kids to become, to go into the Marine field. That's jobs and all of
boats.
That. But building boats. Maybe they even have a school academy for building boats. And that reminds me of the Industrial Revolution, where we were all brought from the field to go into these universities and colleges because the universities need us. But Riviera Beach has always been known for entrepreneurship. I mean, when we look back into our history, and now we go into the service jobs, which now many of us can't even get jobs in service. So I would just like to just encourage us to take this conversation of, the fire department and all these positions that are going to be created for fire and look at how we build in a pipeline to include jobs in those areas. Those are just some thoughts going back to your conversation about junior high school and elementary school and this junior deputy program.
Yeah, I think that, Ann, you brought up a tremendous thing here because I have a meeting coming up soon with the city manager because I sat on the committee of putting the 100-year anniversary, and, of course, that starts September. The other day, Artie told me that he was over there when you had some kind of meeting to update on you building the new fire department over there on, Blue Heron? I thought that was just unbelievable. If I would have known.
At the Marina.
At the Marina. Yeah, you did it at the Marina, but you building it on Congress and Blue Heron. Is that right?
Correct.
Isn't that what
Correct.
The fire The thing that I'm so impressed with, your family thought enough to come in here, and you and your siblings was reared up in Riviera, went off to whatever the schools they were. But the main thing about it, you came back here to do some monumental like you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I can't wait till we get in a position, not only, forget about being the first black, but the first anything who was from this town to do something like that.
Yeah,
now, I haven't put it together, but it will be done. And then the Steve and Edward will come as soon as you finish. We'll be the first group to go in and have lunch with the firemen in Ann House.
Yes,
now, I promise you, if I'm alive, that will happen.
that'd
tell
nice.
Everybody, I know the young lady. They say, how long? Yeah, I said, well, she was about 8 years of age. But she was running
nice,
out there
nice.
With her. Yeah, right over at the Goodman Park. She'll tell you.
That's
she
right.
was out
That's
there,
right.
one,
That's
one
right.
of the cheerleaders. Yeah.
Yes.
See, this is what not only this program about, it's what Riviera's program about, is
right.
about. And this is what Steve is saying. He's teaching kids that other ones traveled the same path. And we can't stop that. And Edward, I need the world to know that you always wanted to do something for senior citizens. You got with me numerous of times, said, Mr. Calloway, his money, his food, whatever you're doing with senior citizens, you have earned your stripes for that. And you continue to do that. Steve, this is my final remark. It's back to Steve and Ann, and I'm through.
Okay. Well, I'll jump in real quickly. I wanted to just reiterate one thing that Ed was talking about and we were talking about, and I want you to just keep doing that, and that is exposure. You know, because I was sitting here thinking, we've talked a lot on this show about how stereotypes, and I know that what happens, and I'll make my point real quickly, what happens to a lot of times with black people, we get stereotyped at believing, you know, that there's certain things that black people do and certain things that black people
right,
don't do.
Right.
And so, you know, when you go down to the Caribbean, black people, they're running all of the stuff on the water, right?
Yeah,
they're taking out the charter, the fishing charter boats.
Yeah,
they're taking out the scuba diving boats and the snorkeling boats, you know. And then here we are right here in a very similar environment, but a lot of black people have been pigeonholed into these stereotypes thinking that that's not what we do. And so all of this money and all of these opportunities to be made on the water, we're not taking advantage of it. So I think, you know, when you and other people just keep showing young people that, like you said, you can own your own boat. You can do charter fishing boats. You know, you can build boats. You know, I know when I worked with the Maritime Academy, that was one of the challenges was we could not get enough black students to take advantage of the opportunities at the Maritime Academy because they were more concerned about, well, they don't have a football team and they don't have a basketball team.
No,
and they didn't understand the opportunities, you know, to be made on the water, you know. So we need to just keep exposing it. And, you know, you as one person and myself, Mr. Calloway, and all of us can just keep exposing to our young people so that they break free of those stereotypes that limit them, you know.
So that's
what I just wanted to speak to that.
Yeah, like you said about boat mechanic makes some money, you know, and that's all up on boats in Riviera Beach down there. If you become a boat mechanic, oh, my goodness, hell yeah. You go to school, learn how to work on the boat engines.
And they need to know that.
It's $80 an hour. The man going to tell you up front, $80 an hour for me to work on your boat, you know. So it's a lot. Yeah, like you say, we're right by the water. There's a lot of opportunities right there, you know. All that beach, a nice beach area there. Yeah.
And then the port is the mouth of the ocean in Palm Beach County up here. When you leave the port, you go right by Peanut Island and go right in that ocean, the inlet. But now, my last thing is that as many kids that we have going to school here, if we can get them to get into these high-paying jobs or good jobs or career jobs, law enforcement and fire department, that's always a career. Education, going into education, that's what Steve, that was his choice, and is into business. And then you got the construction. You got all those things here. We are a proud people, and we can't go and start slipping back and say, well, let other people do it. No, let us do it.
No.
Let people follow us. The first black firemen started in Riviera back in 67. There was no black farmers nowhere in Palm Beach County before 67.
That's right.
So we got to try to promote that. Richard Weston. A guy named Bosco. We call him Bosco, Oscar Walker. His brother, Red Walker, oldest brother. And then the Davis boy, Dickie Davis.
Right, Dickie Davis.
Doug Lundy. Rufus Blue. We went and handpicked him. And then when he got Robert McCray and Benson and Edward, all that group there, and even Conrad.
Don Wilson had
about 12 of them at his house, was going over the tests, telling them what the questions and preparing them. He was like the teacher. He was the teacher.
That's right.
Yeah, he was the teacher. Yeah,
okay,
you see,
so Mr.
You
Keller,
go ahead.
No, I just want to let you know. I just set you up just now. I just needed you to repeat that on the air, because that's exactly the point that we're making here. That was 20, 30 some odd years ago. Now, in order for us to change the face of the city and the trajectory of the city, we have to do the same thing again and again and again.
That's right.
That's how we change it. So we want to put this out in the atmosphere. We want to put this out in the air. We write our own history. We don't need somebody to tell us our history. We know our history. This is our history. And so the students that we're having a problem at the Maritime School, we might be waiting a little too late to influence them that this is the direction that they should go. You see, when I look at my own history, how did I get into construction? I had no idea, no plans to go into construction. I went off to college and got an undergraduate degree in accounting and was working on getting a master's in finance. And I began to realize that the Brooks family that began to build Riviera Beach, Jonathan Brooks was my neighbor. He was my cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And then to realize that his life impacted my life. So my point is, in order for us to make a difference in the lives of Maritime, if we decide, look, we're going to be known as a maritime city. We're going to go into these schools. We're going to be known as the place for anybody that want to go into fire department. I don't care where you are in the world, come to the city of Riviera Beach. And my point is that we can decide and dictate who we want to be known as. We don't have to wait for other people to tell us. Just continue to go back and look at our history.
That's right.
We run out of time.
I know, but let me go back and say this here. Some of the blunt
yes,
of the problem, I hate to say I have to accept that because of my blindness, not because my eyes are blind, blinded in thinking. When we had all those, we made a concerted effort to go and get people to get in the fire department. And we begged them, said, look, we will get you through this. We will help get somebody to teach you. Anything happening in Riviera, whether it's down there working on the boats, we can find people to tutor you. Our job is to go get the kids and get the parents to buy into that everybody's going to go to
the key. That's the key right there. Yeah, that's the key.
We can do that. And we have to do that and not turn it over. See, a lot of us got old, and we just assume, and that's a bad word, that everybody's going to take the ball and run with it. No, you've got to go and get the that's not going to happen. But anyway, I'm finished. I appreciate being on this program because of it's so enlightening where everybody's telling the story. And we're gonna have a 2 weeks of something in the 100-year celebration about this show and about the ones I told Edward. We're going to have a whole 2 weeks. It's probably in June. We're going to bring all the kids that grew up at Tate Gym and Wells Gym all back.
That'll be nice.
A celebration.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I have, if I want to jump in, I just have a quick question. That'll be, I guess, my question and my comment. So Ed, because I keep hearing when you all triggered something in me, I remember that there were so many blacks on the fire departments in West Palm and Riviera Beach that you all had your Association of Black Firefighters, I guess was the name of it. I remember actually being the guest speaker when you all had your conference one year, like I guess maybe back in the late 90s or early 2000s
right,
or something.
Right.
But, I mean, there were so many of y'all, you know, with Rhett and all of the brothers down in West Palm and, all of y'all in Riviera Beach. So, I mean, so y'all were strong and powerful, and you all were so organized that you all were reaching back and bringing in the young guys and ladies and helping them to come into the fire departments. Does that organization of black firefighters, do you all still exist?
They still exist, and we got guys that, I don't think we need as like we used to, but we got guys that go out and try to get young kids in the program. Matter of fact, I got my cousin, one of my cousin boys, he up in Orlando. It took him 5 years to get on that fire department. I told him, don't give up. He had a little problem, but he went there. He riding that truck. He's been on 5 years already. He's been on 5 years. Every time he see me, he said, thank you, thank you, uncle. Yeah, so not him, and like I showed the chef kid, I kind of, pushed him that way. And I had another little Haitian boy up here in Port St. Lucie. I got him. I got to get him on, but I told him what to do. I kind of, like, coached him through the program, and he became a paramedic. So, yeah, we try to do that. And I call guys, and I tell guys, get them young boys, because we got a lot of guys on the fire department now going to be retired. A lot of young black guys came on when I was there. We need to replenish that. We can't just let them go and don't replace them with somebody else, see?
Yeah, because you all were strong.
Yeah, well, we were strong.
Yeah,
it was good.
Go ahead.
Yeah, let me make a suggestion. And this is why we do the show. I know that we've gone way over, but this is great, like Dan said. I would like to challenge you, if you're interested, Mr. Walker, and I can talk to you offline. I do have your phone number here, but with these five fire stations that we're looking to build inside the city,
right,
we can talk offline about going to the point that Steve is making about the black firefighters and have them be
right,
a part of a coalition that we're creating to just, we can build our own program and use these fire stations as a great example to build a pipeline into the fire.
That's true.
Fire
that's right. While the doors being open, being built, we can get them to look in that direction. That's exactly true.
Exactly. Okay. All right. So I'll get with you and we can talk with Dr.
Okay.
Robinson
okay.
and the school board about what programs are already exist. Going back to Dan's Callaway's point about the schools. And then we can connect the dots ourselves. And this is how we take control over our own future in our own city and not wait, like you're saying, like we're discussing. We don't have to wait for somebody to tell us, who we are and how to do it. We know how to do it.
Right.
We just have
to
together.
Get
it
done.
Yeah.
Right.
And get it done.
That's it. Right. I'm in your corner. You tell me where to come and where to meet. I'll get it done and we'll just meet up and get them kids looking in that direction.
Perfect.
Okay.
All right, I'll reach out to you tomorrow offline. Dan, thank you so very much. Steve, thank you so very much. We want to remind everybody that you have been listening to hashtag I Am Riviera Beach. And our special guest today was Mr. Edward Walker, retired chief from the City of Riviera Beach Fire Department. And our host and co-host Dan Callaway, Steve White, thank you so very much. And everybody have a good evening, and we will see everybody back here next week. Dan, do you know who the guest is going to be next week so we can let
Otis
the world know?
Otis Anderson. Otis Anderson.
Bucky. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. He's in Las Vegas. He'll be in next week. Okay.
All right, perfect. So we'll see everybody.
Have a nice day.
With Otis.
All right, good job,
thank
Ed. Thank you.
Good job. Thank you
thank
so much.
You.
I appreciate everything. And I'll get in touch with you.
Thank
yes, ma'am. Okay. Thank you now.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.